Mysterio Lionel! Extraordinario! Magnifico!
Man U and Arsenal play the most boring game two high-tier teams can play, and Messi messes up some Inter players, and we're going to talk about it. Welcome to Season 2 of The Football Corner, Mancha's very own home for all things football. My name is Vikram.
And my name is Shreyas.
If you guys are new, you can catch us wherever you get your podcasts, Apple, Google, Spotify, Stitcher, CastBox, and more.
You can also find us on our website, manchamedia.com, or at Mancha Sports on all social media.
So Shreyas, why don't we start with an analysis of the EPL game week.
Boring.
So we saw Man U and Arsenal play a very highly competitive, can I say competitive, game?
For potentially mid-table teams, yes.
It was so boring though, man.
Yeah.
It got really boring, and I thought that it would catch up in terms of pace and stuff. I think the rain wasn't helping the players. It was raining pretty strongly. But literally the entire first half was a snooze fest except for that McTominay screamer which came out of nowhere.
Right.
The second half picked up a little bit. Aubameyang's goal added a little spice, the whole VAR thing, hai, nahi hai, and all of that.
Right.
But overall, not too impressive by both sides. Lacazette ended up missing out for Arsenal. So they started their young teenager. And I don't know, man. Any thoughts on this game? I thought it was very poorly contested. Even the commentators thought that it was mediocre in terms of quality of the game. But I don't know how this affects both Arsenal and Man U's sort of confidence levels, especially Man U because they've had their worst start to the league ever, I think.
Right. So, I mean, to put it, I think aptly, Hotstar is sort of upping their troll game, and they were advertising this game as no defense versus no attack.
Wow, are you serious?
Yeah.
I did not see that.
So,
wait, which one's which?
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. Like, literally, which one's which?
I mean, I guess the Arsenal's no defense and United's no attack.
It could go either way.
Exactly.
Given the state of both teams right now.
Which is why Hotstar's, like, sort of, like, you know, unconditionally on a hotbed of gold mine. So, but anyways, in terms of the game, I expected Arsenal to be a little more competitive. They definitely had a stronger squad, I guess, on paper, their first 11. And we knew United was struggling, but yeah, the game was really bad. And it's almost like Arsenal is having bad game after bad game, but Oba just like continuously steps up. And this is like 7 goals in 7 games now. So,
you know who didn't have a good game was Nicolas Pepe. He did not have a good game. Like, it's kind of worrying the amount of money Arsenal spent on the player.
But it's still early days. I mean, give the guy a break. He's shown some flashes of, like, being fast and, you know, doing his thing. And he's assisted a goal here and there. Anyway, Spider-Man starts. So, now that, you know, Spidey's back to the MCU, you never know.
I guess. It's just that... So I was watching the game with two Arsenal fans. Just
how bad can your life be to have not one but two Arsenal fans?
Oh, they're going to love this. But, you know, it's just when they were there, the constant frustration, you know, when you're a fan, then you have this extra like sort of level of frustration when your team's not playing well. And it was all directed towards Pepe because Arsenal's not used to spending a lot of money on one player, right? And when they do, they expect something magical to happen.
Yeah.
He's their most expensive signing, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, double their entire budget for the summer.
Exactly. And for the guy to have only one PL goal, which was a penalty given to him by Oba, it's not looking that promising, honestly, because it's not an unknown player that these guys are have recruited. He showed signs of brilliance last season, and they sort of expected him to carry on. So, expectedly, there's a few weeks of sort of settling in and stuff, but those are over now. And we still haven't seen any spark from him.
Yeah, but I still think like the whole squad, except for maybe Laka and Oba, who've been consistently like good and Oba's been scoring like crazy, the whole squad isn't the great. Like, Ceballos had a few moments of brilliance. We haven't seen him since. The defense is a mess. So... there's a lot of unrest in that squad. There was also a lot of talk about how Emery had shortlisted 5 potential players as captains, and apparently he couldn't select one, and he got the players to vote on who they think the captain should be, and they all voted Xhaka. Like, how bad...
I don't know if they all voted Xhaka, but he got the majority.
He got the majority. Yeah, okay, it wasn't unanimous, fair. But, yeah, so there's a lot still going on. And for a new player to come, not in an unsettled team, but in a team still finding its way. And even Emery said that even with the transfers, he doesn't know if his squad's any better from last season. Like, losing a player like Ramsey, who's killing it at Juve, by the way.
Yeah, yeah.
So, I mean, I feel for Emery, and I think it's still going to be a while. Maybe let's see if they have any success in the Europa League. But I don't know. I'd still give Pepe at least time till December and see if they make it to the knockouts. And then we'll see how they go from there.
See, firstly, they don't have a choice with Pepe. They have to give time till December because it's not like they have a lot going for them. Secondly, on the Xhaka thing, I read this interesting stat. I'm not sure about the details, but it was more or less around the fact that his mistakes have led to more goals than any other player in either the top six or the entire EPL.
Ouch.
Which is kind of messed up. And just looking at it, like, who else is the shoe-in for Arsenal captain? That's the state of their squad right now.
Correct.
So it's not like there's one player. You know, Kosh is gone and the Mertesackers have gone. Yeah. Ozil, I mean, he shouldn't be captain. I don't even know what that situation
is. He might just be shipped off in Jan. You never know.
He should be, man. Otherwise, like, it's just going to become like... What is happening with Ozil? Like, where is he? What is he doing?
He comes in
to play one game. He actually does decent. And then he's not on the bench again. It's so weird.
Yeah, he's busy praying to the mafia lords to not, like, jump him. That's one. Otherwise, he's playing PUBG. And, asking Kolasinac to, like, be his guard dog or whatever.
Kolasinac could be a great guard dog, man. So, what implications does this have on the mid-table? It's... Manu's gone down to 10th position now. They have 9 points. Arsenal's actually at fourth. They remain at fourth. West Ham's fifth. Spurs is sixth. Chelsea seventh. Bournemouth eighth. Crystal Palace ninth. And Man U 10th.
Yeah.
Ouch, firstly. Right? this is not... Even taking into account United standards the past few seasons, this is messed up. After seven games, you're in 10th position.
Right.
And you're losing points. Like you're leaking points. Talking about Leicester just really quickly.
Yeah.
They're on their rampage. They didn't let loose. They actually amped it up. They beat Newcastle 5-0.
Yes, that's crazy.
Now, the true test is going to be the coming game week because they're playing Liverpool
away.
They're playing Liverpool away. Even though Klopp... I feel like this is becoming Klopp's like MO now. Like every team, he's just coming out with like a very like, oh my God, they're really scary. Oh my God. He did that with Salzburg. He did that with Norwich first game as well.
Yeah.
He said they're very tricky and this and that. And Norwich went on to beat City. So, and he said that, listen, the way we've leaked goals against Salzburg, which we'll talk about in a bit, Vardy's going to run riot in our defense. He's already said that.
I don't think so. I mean, Van Dijk got cut really quickly. I mean, we'll discuss that later. And there was Gomez. And Gomez doesn't feature in the Premier League too much. So.
Well, I think he might be playing this game because there's something up with Matip. Yeah.
Oh, nice. Fantasy players.
Yeah. And... the other thing about Liverpool now going into this game is that they already fielded... we keep talking about the Salzburg game, but they literally fielded a full-strength team against Salzburg. And now we know why, because Salzburg ended up troubling them a lot.
Right.
And these guys are going to play again. Presumably, they're going to play full-strength against Leicester as well.
Yeah.
So, the first question on my mind, should I have Jamie Vardy in my fantasy team?
I mean, considering you didn't even have time to set your team and your team actually did better than it usually does, I think you just...
Well, no, not this past game week. I actually set my team. I forgot to, even though I asked you last episode that De Bruyne should be my captain, I don't know what, I goofed up. I want to blame the fantasy website. They goofed up and they put Aguero as my captain, man. And thankfully, my defense kind of pulled through. I got 8-6-6 from my three defenders.
Not bad.
I actually got 6 on a fourth defender, but he was on the bench. But other than that, I was a pretty average week for me. So, Tammy Abraham for Jamie Vardy?
Oh, for sure. I mean...
Against Liverpool?
Jamie Vardy for...
As in, I have Tammy Abraham. Right. Should I get him out and put Jamie Vardy in?
I mean, just thinking long term. But funnily enough, before I complete that thought for Leicester's perspective and Vardy's perspective, Chelsea have actually a run of like 3-4 games, which are like relatively easy. Like we have Southampton, Newcastle.
Right.
So...
And Abraham scored midweek against...
against Lille. But I don't know. I still think... Like just see the way Vardy's been playing. See the kind of runs he makes. See the kind of coke he's been snorting, the number of lines that he does. And I mean, I definitely go for Vardy over Abraham. I don't know what the price difference is, but definitely Vardy.
I think it'll be a million up in Vardy's favor, right. But I'm a little skeptical of pulling Vardy in on this game week particularly.
Yeah, I mean, considering, see, a lot of your transfers, you have to look at them long-term to some extent and also look at the player's form. Like, even though Liverpool might end up thrashing them or winning easily, Vardy might get in a goal here and there or an assist or something like that. So,
I also, we had word with one of our competitors in the league, Raghav Nanda, his team name's Obi-Wan Bisaka. He's kind of had a resurgence in the past 3-4 weeks.
Right.
And his sort of short-term analysis of why that's happening, he's like, you guys don't play fantasy properly. All you have to do is just go to the number one player in the world and try to copy that team as much as possible.
Okay.
And it's clearly working. It's working. So less brains, more like you suck and just listen to what this guy's doing. That's kind of what I've been trying to follow the past 2 weeks also. So maybe I'm going to ape that strategy as well.
But that's such a cop-out. Like, then there's no fun in fantasy.
The fun comes from winning. The fun doesn't come from being mediocre, but making your own decisions. Trust me, I'm in that position. It's no fun. Just watching you guys just go on a rampage. So that's one thing that I'll be considering. Mm-hmm. Your point about Abraham is right. That's the only reason I actually pulled him in is because Chelsea have a decent run of fixtures. And right. If he is riding high on confidence, then these are the sort of fixtures that people end up scoring in. So maybe I'm going to do that. The other games, well, it was pretty straightforward. Chelsea ended up winning 2-0 to Brighton.
Our first clean sheet.
Clean sheet, which is pretty impressive. City had a pretty standard performance.
Yeah.
The one team that didn't look, well, at least on paper, didn't look as standard was Liverpool. They won 1-0 against Sheffield.
Yeah. And it was a good game for Sheffield. Like, they weren't parking the bus or playing on the counter and stuff. Like, they had some good chances, man, and they were like sort of unlucky to come away with the loss, but I'm glad that Sheffield stepped up.
That's true. And now if you look at the top table, Liverpool's actually made a 5-point gap.
Yeah.
So City dropping points on the loss as well as the draw they had, but season's still too early.
Way too early. I mean, let's see. I mean, Liverpool lost their first Champions League match and then they had a sticky second one. City is sort of doing okay, but Guardiola being his arrogant self and already congratulating Liverpool on winning the Premier League. But yeah, things get hot and heavy between December and Feb. That's when the group stage finishes and knockouts of Champions League starts. And you have your FA Cup and League Cup also going on side by side. And also December, like, I think teams are almost playing 2-3 matches almost every day. One every day. So I think that's when squad depth, fitness, everything else comes into play. And on your point that Liverpool have been fielding their full strength team, it's going to be really cool to see if they have like one serious injury to any main player, maybe like a Van Dijk. This not particularly struggled without Alisson, but their defense and their goalkeeping hasn't looked the best, so to say. And we've seen that in the Champions League. So that's when things hot up. It's too early to tell.
Fair enough, I hear you. And why don't we just take this opportunity and move on to the more exciting stuff, which was the Champions League matches.
Champions League.
Any preference on the one you want to start with?
Since we've been talking a lot about pool, let's start about the pool game and how Van Dijk got cut and like scored. And oh my God, that's so beautiful to see.
Dude, the entire time in the run-up to this game, Klopp said like multiple times, or maybe I read multiple articles of the same interview, he's like, these guys are scary, we need to be very careful. And it was evident that it wasn't just talk because he fielded his full strength squad, right? And the halftime results sort of didn't underline it. Like,
right.
Because Liverpool seemed kind of dominant and had a 2-goal or a 3-goal lead.
3-goal, yeah.
So that sort of didn't justify him starting his squad. But the second half definitely did, man.
Yeah, it was funny actually because, I mean, you see teams like get an early lead and they sort of step off the gas. And you don't expect a team like Liverpool to step off the gas. And they had a couple, like Salah had a one-on-one that he missed and the other players too. Like, it was a lot of attacking going on. But yeah, these guys didn't stop. They have a couple of Asian players. And in fact, the breakout star for Salzburg had been this guy called Haaland. And he scored, I don't know, some 18-20 goals already.
And Haaland came out with a statement after that. His dad was a football player as well.
Yeah.
So he had a very famous Anfield goal.
Oh.
So he's like, I've kind of taken the family thing forward and all. So he's super proud about his goal. Salzburg, obviously, like, kudos, man. Like,
right.
To play like that and to come back after a half like that,
yeah,
the way they did against probably the best team in the world. It's yeah. at home, which is no
right,
joke.
Right.
The actual point that I want to sort of mention here is that Liverpool's sort of performance after going 3-3 was very encouraging, right? That's something that top teams require, because you don't panic, you don't become like what an Ajax sort of did with Champions League last season in the semifinals against Spurs.
Right.
So them still holding composure, making sure that they get the 3 points out, that was the only pro, I guess, from the second half of Liverpool, because the defensive woes were pretty weird, man.
It was, but that's the thing. I mean, yeah, you have the most expensive defender in the world. He's UEFA Player of the Year, potential Ballon d'Or winner. You have one of the most expensive keepers in the world. At the same time, look at their fullbacks. They are pure attacking. Like, you rarely speak about Alexander-Arnold saying, oh, what a great tackle, oh, what great defense. You always say great free kick, great run, great cross.
Right.
And the same thing goes with Robertson. I mean, yes, he's super, super fast, and it's very rare to see him outrun. So, yeah, he can track back and he can do his thing. But even talking about his goal, like, he runs past the half line, lays the ball off, and he just continues his run bit by bit. And there is no forward, there is no midfielder, no one in the box. He just continued his run. Alexander-Arnold, you know, gets that pace, gets that nice low cross triple tap on FIFA.
Right.
And Robertson's there to finish it off. So considering how attack-minded Liverpool are, both on the ball and off the ball, it's not so difficult to see that defense is not their strongest point, especially now. So kudos to Salzburg for going and trying it and going all out. But I hope some Premier League teams can take a note of that. And before Alisson comes back, because he's already starting to train, I guess he'll be back soon. I hope they'll be challenged, because it's going to get really boring really soon otherwise.
Well, next weekend is a true challenge for them, because it's Leicester. It's a fast-paced team.
It is,
and
yes.
They're high on confidence. So right. It doesn't get better than this in terms of not a City, but a good team challenging you.
For sure.
So it's going to be pretty interesting how Liverpool respond firstly to this midweek game.
Yeah.
And if they do pull out a convincing 3 points out of the Leicester game, then that'll boost their confidence to the next level. So that'll be interesting to see. I guess the next game we can move on to is the manhandling of Tottenham Hotspur by Bayern Munich. That was... What happened to Spurs in that game? Because I watched the game from 1-0 midway through the first half till 5-2. And I stopped because I was like, "Isse zyada kya hoga," right? Because
exactly.
I moved to the Juve game. And like after the post-match analysis of 7-2, I was like, did I mistake it? Was it 7-2? Am I thinking wrong?
Right.
It's such a big switch from 1-1 where they were competitive.
Right.
Even Bayern was having... Well, it wasn't easy for them to attack. Even they were having difficulties to create chances. And what the end scoreline ended up with, it's baffling to me.
Yeah, it's insane. I mean, we've been talking a lot about what's going on behind the scenes. But I guess even after the transfer season and everything, they've definitely weaker on the defense part of it. And that clearly showed. And considering the fact that apparently there's a lot of dressing room unrest, possibly even the coach isn't bothered, and there are rumors that he's going to take up the Madrid job next year. So we don't know what's going on with that. But yeah, this squad doesn't look like they're one unit. The Premier League, they haven't been consistent. They lost to Newcastle at home. So it's fun to see a London club suffer the way they did. I think this is, I read somewhere, this is the largest amount by which an English team has lost at home in the group stage.
Well, yeah, that looks like it. It's really weird, man. And even just talking about the game, Eriksen didn't start.
Yeah.
Which is, again, like, it's becoming this weird Ozil situation,
right?
Like, I thought that after the transfer window shut, everything would normalize. It seemed that way for the week after the transfer window, he started the game and stuff.
Yeah.
And starts on the bench for this one, comes on when they start shitting their pants, quite literally. But talking about the game, I think any favorite goals from the game?
I don't know. Like Lewandowski, his technique is extremely admirable. And the guy is like 30 plus now, and he should be slowing down, but it doesn't seem like he is. He's still enjoying his football.
He has 10 goals in 6 games in the league.
Yeah.
That's mad.
Yeah. So, but I think Serge Gnabry, just doing his thing. I mean, it almost looked like it was training. Like, they set up these drills where, oh, in this situation, you cut this way and shoot that way. And literally all his goals seemed like that. Like, it was so easy. So, and it was really cool to see. I mean, it was almost like he himself was surprised that he got 4 goals. Like, they almost got bored in the end. They were just, haan, chal, theek hai, maar lete ek do aur.
I can't decide which my favorite is between Lewandowski's first goal and Gnabry's third.
Right.
So if you remember the third, it's Alcantara just giving a long, long
and
loft.
He just took that first touch away.
First touch away, just away from the defender, and a really composed finish at the bottom right. I think that was insane. And Lewandowski's first goal, man, like the ball's behind him or in front of him. Technically, his back's facing the goal. He does a half turn. The ball's still not in line with him, and he manages to just rocket it in. No chance for the keeper to even come close. Hugo Lloris. So. It was a drubbing, dude. I mean, for Bayern Munich, obviously, such a huge confidence booster because we've seen in the Premier League, Spurs are not the most stable team, but still, for the team that finished the finalist the last year and all, it's confidence boosts on page at least. From Spurs' side, everything looks in shambles because when a team is spiraling like this, is when all the bad stuff starts coming out. So the dirty laundry's at the dressing room thing. Pochettino not interested. I read something about Harry Kane wants to move on. Senior player exodus hone wala hai. Jal raha hai Spurs. Ye ho raha hai, wo ho raha hai. So it's pretty interesting how Spurs are going to bounce back from this as well. Even if they have like mediocre fixtures, it's very important to show stability and confidence in their gameplay.
Right.
Also, this Eriksen situation needs to be resolved ASAP.
I mean, I don't know if the, like, what is the situation now? Like, obviously, we know that he hasn't signed an extension yet. So either he's waiting for a Jan transfer or he'll go for free in the summer. So, I mean, we don't know really what's happening on that front. But everything else besides that, they shouldn't be having problems. Their attack is great. Yes, our defense isn't the best, but I don't know, like Son came back from injury and from suspension, and he's been running his ass off just the way he like he usually does. And he got his goal yesterday, but I don't know. I think if it continues like this, come December, they're going to be in a bad, bad place. I think that's what I don't like about the league is that, you know, except for the first two, everything else is such a mess. Arsenal, we don't know. United's having a tough time. Chelsea's figuring out their stuff. Spurs are not doing the same thing that they used to doing. And then we have your Leicester and Wolves and Everton and everyone else. And I think everyone's trying to figure out their season still. And the only team that's sort of, despite injury, despite everything else, winning like crazy has been Liverpool. So it's going to be a funny season. It's been a funny season thus far. And I think it's going to continue to be a funny season.
I agree, man. And Spurs almost always has a late resurgence in the second half of the season. Yeah. But they've never sort of been in this bad a position when the season started. If the results don't show it, then the team, the game, the morale, everything looks a little more stable usually. So seeing that from Spurs is very uncharacteristic and interesting to see how they bounce back. The next game that I want to move on to, it's pretty obvious. I had a lot of fun watching this, was Inter-Barcelona.
Right.
Now, Inter, I've been noticing in Serie A, they've been on a tear. They've been on a rampage. They don't look like a team from last season. Conte's done his thing with them. Like, you know, like you can see players live or die by their manager, by the way they play. And usually Conte teams do that. When they don't, he ends up leaving. So we can clearly see that in Inter. Because apart from Sanchez and Lukaku, they've done signings, but they haven't been massive, like on the face of it.
Star players.
They've been very like pragmatic signings, role players and stuff. And they let Perisic go, who kind of was a mainstay in their attack, and Icardi to PSG as well.
Right.
So because Perisic doesn't figure in Conte's style of play with the wing backs and no sort of wide wingers, Perisic didn't have a role to play, and Icardi, it's pretty clear what his situation has been.
Yeah.
So it's been very, very good to see Inter doing what they're doing. Yeah. And the way they were playing, like very free-flowing, very attack-minded, which is not something that's very that's seen a lot in the Serie A.
Yeah.
So I already knew. And plus, Barcelona's current situation, which seems a little rocky. So this was the right time to strike Barcelona out.
Right.
And that first half was pretty interesting from Inter, man. I like their football.
Totally. I mean, I don't know who this new guy is, Lautaro Martinez. And he's leading from the front. I mean, I saw Lukaku's ill or...
injured.
Injured. So... I mean, even when he left United, like, despite his bad performances and stuff, he is still an old school typical number nine. Put the ball at him, he knows how to finish, strong in the air, etc., etc. So without him, I didn't know if they could trouble Barcelona at home, as in at the Nou Camp. But that second minute goal, man, that finish, decent ball, I think Sanchez assisted, and a good run. Didn't know the guy would be able to take a shot even that good. And yeah, beat Stegen, and very, very exciting first half.
Very exciting first half. And that kind of just filled up Inter's sort of petrol tank for the rest of the half, because they kept that up. It gave them a lot of confidence, and you could see that. And Barcelona, the way that squad was set up, right? So they had Busquets, and they had Frenkie de Jong, and they had Arthur in midfield.
Yeah.
And they had Griezmann, Suarez, and Messi. So that De Jong visibly uncomfortable in his sort of forwardish midfield role.
Correct.
And there was a lot of, like, it seemed like visible confusion in terms of how the play should really go. Messi wasn't getting the ball that much, so he ended up dropping back a lot to get the ball and try to start an attack, which usually means that either he dribbles through and is a part of the final attack, or he has to pass to someone, which wasn't working out too well. Semedo had to play left back, and it's very evident that he's not suited for that, because he's a right-footed player.
Correct.
So he would not be able to sort of pierce the left side with sort of a cross or anything.
Yep.
And Longley, who's their center back, just looked out of sorts, man. Like, he, even there was a Martinez free header from 8 yards out or so.
Right.
And Martinez is maybe like 4 inches shorter than him.
Yeah, he's not the tallest guy.
And the guy's giving him a free header. Ter Stegen just had a crazy save to keep that out of goal. So Barcelona was looking pretty rocky until the second half.
Oh my God.
Which he basically got Busquets off and got Arturo Vidal on.
Correct.
So De Jong went to his preferred sort of defensive midfield, controlling the play.
Yeah.
And Arturo Vidal and Arthur are just like helping out the forward attack. So Messi doesn't need to drop back.
Yeah.
And I think that completely changed the look of it. Barcelona looked a little more like it was like a jigsaw puzzle with like, pieces just come fit together and everything fits. And after that, it was just Barcelona, man.
After that, it was the Suarez show, man. I mean, kudos to Conte, kudos to his tactics. I know all about them, obviously, with 2 years at Chelsea. But I think the only way to beat it out is, you know, goals like that. And oh my God, that, I mean, I think that volley was from outside the D, not even inside the D.
It was outside the D. It was not like he actually, it wasn't a standing volley.
Yeah.
He put his entire body behind it.
Yeah.
I felt like it didn't even connect with his foot. It like connected with the upper part of his foot and the lower part of his shin.
Right.
But as soon as he hit it, you could see that he knew it was in, because he was up before the goal was in. He started celebrating.
Correct. And yeah, just the way he was winding up to take that shot, it was almost like, I mean, it was almost out of the training ground. Like, even when the ball came in, it almost seemed like it wasn't close enough to the goal. He wasn't close enough to the goal. And it didn't seem like there'd be too much of danger in terms of either collecting the ball or shooting or anything. But that's Suarez for you. And just looking at the goal again and again and again, it, like, the keeper was closer to that side of the post that it went to on the side. He still couldn't get it. Like, he was nowhere near. It just whizzed past him. And That was some freaking goal.
It was fast and low and perfectly placed, right?
Yeah.
And that's a true striker for you. Like, regardless of where you are on the field, close to the D, inside, outside, you see a chance, you take it.
Right.
That's the instinct. It's not even a decision at that point. He sees the ball coming in, Vidal's cross, and he's like, yeah, this is a shot for me, because the guy is far away.
Right.
So a complete instinctive shot, beautifully taken, beautifully connected. Even though Barcelona was pressing, they didn't look threatening in that final attack.
Correct.
And out of nowhere, this goal just changes it.
Yes.
And that second goal, man, Messi's back, baby.
Yeah, I mean, it's so funny to say, we're talking about Conte, his tactics, you know, that defensive setup, holding on, maybe at least for the draw. And Messi was just running past, like, those guys weren't even there. And he was toying with them. Like, he'd go past them, run faster than them, let them catch up, then cut back. And these guys still couldn't get near him. But again, Suarez stole the show, man. It's... like, again, from that pass, it didn't seem like he could do much.
Right.
And this is Diego Godin we're talking about. Like,
he's old.
Come on. He's 90 plus on FIFA. Like,
that's true. But that first shot's completely, like, regardless of Godin or VVD or anyone, that first shot just completely takes away from that.
Right. And if you, like, slow down and see, it's almost like Suarez. I don't know if he knew about the defender or not, but what he did was he let the ball go across his body. So he just negated the defender. The defender can't do anything.
Right.
And in and then when he takes a touch with his left foot, it looks like it's a bad touch because it goes really far away from him. But it's almost like he set himself up. There was no other defender. And right. the next shot is the goal. So, yeah, man, that was a beautiful lesson in what center forwards can do and what they're supposed to do. And yeah, I guess it's all about the teeth, I guess.
You know, even I saw it in slow motion because I was very curious to see if this was premeditated by Suarez or not. Because when the goal happened, I couldn't make out because of the angle of the shot and all of whether this was half luck, half instinct.
Right.
But when I saw it in slow motion, the way his body was angled, he wanted that to happen. Right. Exactly what happened, which is Suarez just... I'm so taken aback by the fact that he can still surprise me because I've been watching him since like early Liverpool, even Atletico days a little bit, right? And it's all his goals, especially like most of his goals look like they're out of nothing or just like, what the hell did he do? And the guy, that he keeps doing that and he's still playing at that level. It's very good to see that because of Barcelona's current situation with Griezmann sort of now
settling in,
he needs to play that left role now that Messi and Suarez are back at their top. Yeah. So he needs to, he had a decent game. I don't think he had a bad game at all.
Yeah, he should have probably scored. He had a good game, but yeah, he still seems a little shaky.
It's out of position, understandable. Two great players have, well, not two, one great player has struggled with it and Neymar was just Neymar.
Yeah.
And Dembele came on and he had a very positive impact on the game as well. Just kept pinning Inter back into the half. And the entire second half, we didn't see anything from Inter.
Correct. I guess by then Conte already knew that, you know, his attack fizzled out and just were holding on. And that's what Italian teams do. That's what Conte does. But no, man, I think Messi and Suarez on song, there's no stopping them.
And especially the second goal was after Conte had made a couple of defensive changes as well. Yeah. But nothing, you can't do anything there in that second goal. It was great to see Messi sort of... The change in the entire team and also Messi's sort of performance between the first and the second half was very encouraging. Now, the question is that if this is what the good Barcelona side looks like, is Busquets' position in doubt? Because clearly Busquets and Frenkie de Jong together in that midfield was not working out for that attacking three.
Right. I mean, I guess, obviously, De Jong is a great understudy for Busquets and eventually, obviously, he will take over and Busquets is senior, De Jong still a kid. So... I guess they're going to get De Jong to play as much as he can, wherever it is in the midfield. He's young. He knows how to play with the ball. So I'm sure he won't mind. It's just that it's all the more apparent because everything else is also a little all over the place. But yeah, watching De Jong transfer the ball from defense to midfield and further up ahead is sometimes like magic. And it comes natural to him. I mean, he's a student of the Ajax way of playing, and that's very similar to our Barca plays. So, yeah, it's still early days for De Jong. And even if he doesn't do well this season, he definitely has a certain sense of maturity that you don't see in other young players. So I think he'll be fine.
I think he'll be fine too. And Busquets has said that he'd welcome any sort of competition for his position on the team. It'll be pretty interesting what this team will look like by the end of the season.
Correct.
If they have a decent to great season, then... sort of that'll be the basis of the team going forward.
Right.
So if Busquets features there or not is going to be interesting. Vidal's inclusion in the squad in the second half had more of an impact than I thought it would.
Yeah, I thought he's a forgotten player. Like he's not going to feature anymore.
He's done decent for them as a sub, and it's a matter of maybe the way Inter played. So specifically to Inter's game, how Barcelona needed to fit in. Maybe the team looks different in a standard La Liga fixture. So that'll be pretty interesting to see what happens. For me, the positives were just seeing Messi back first game and
finally
not being subdued and actually doing his thing. That was very encouraging. Didn't get a goal, but had a huge impact on the game.
For sure.
And the second thing was actually Alexis Sanchez. I'd forgotten that the guy could play football and he did a pretty decent job, man.
Well, even off the field, he got a yellow card. So I wonder what he said there.
Conte got one too.
Yeah, so that's pretty interesting now where the referee can just run up to the dugout and like start pulling out
cards. Guardiola got one as well.
Right.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting.
Right.
And then, I think it's good. It's a good thing.
It is good for sure. And then Guardiola started like spitting, I don't know, you know, almost in dissent. I don't know if that was caught or not. I don't know if that was obvious or not. But yeah, it's funny to see these high tempo, high ego managers, and to see them face off with the referees, which is pretty cool. But yeah, we have no idea why Conte and Sanchez were cautioned with yellow cards. We don't know exactly what happened.
I'm so curious to see what they said, because they said something had to have. And talking about Guardiola, City had a pretty standard 2-0 win over Dinamo Zagreb.
Yes.
And Juve, yes, yes, again, pretty standard.
Uh-huh.
Ronaldo got his first goal of the Champions League campaign.
Nice.
Good to see Bernardeschi get on the score sheet as well. So yeah, they had a pretty pretty standard, well-executed 3-0 win over Leverkusen as well.
Right.
PSG won against Galatasaray 1-0.
Icardi.
And yeah, other than that, it was Atletico won 2-0 against Lokomotiv Moscow as well. So
what about Madrid and Bruges?
Madrid and Bruges, speaking of Atletico, yes. So that was surprising to see them down 2-0 at halftime.
Yes, at freaking home.
At freaking home. And it was, I had a pretty interesting statement from the Bruges captain.
Yeah.
His name's Ruud Vormer.
Okay.
So a Belgian club, right?
Yeah.
So they were, he was asked about how does it feel to play against Eden Hazard?
Yeah.
Like, is it a special thing? He's like, it should be special for Eden Hazard to play against Ruud Vormer.
Ouch.
Like, whoa, bro. Who club Bruges ka captain. And I saw the score. I was like, what?
Exactly.
Money where the mouth is, man. Not
totally,
bad.
Totally justified. I mean, even the celebration, the guy that scored both goals, he celebrated like Ronaldo. He did the Ronaldo celebration at Madrid in the Bernabeu. And he was asked, why do you do that? So he's like, look, Ronaldo's one of my favorite players. And I still, you know, watch how he plays. And he's one of the best players in the world. And he said he wanted to show Madrid what they're missing.
Hmm.
How is it his, like, he's not supposed to show what they're missing. But I guess you get a little ahead of yourself playing like that. But yeah, man, Madrid, They were in shambles. I mean, Courtois had to get substituted at halftime, and everyone thought it was because of a bad performance, but apparently he was ill.
Yeah.
But yeah, even the defense, like Ramos, sort of made up for his mistake, got the first goal. But yeah, man, Madrid are in big, big trouble. And I've been seeing a lot of articles by Zidane saying that, you know, let Hazard get one goal, one assist, and his season will take off. I don't know if it's about the goal or the assist. He didn't play too well, I guess. He still has to figure out what his role is, what he's supposed to do, and how it's supposed to happen. But at the same time, I guess with players around him like Luka Jovic, we don't know what's going there. Benzema's getting a few goals here and there. The rest of the midfield, like Kroos and Modric, they're almost like way too old right now. And you need some young blood. And the young blood is all those fancy attacking wingers, Vinicius, Rodrigo. So, yeah, Madrid are in big, big trouble, and they were super lucky to get the draw. It would have been crazy if they lost.
Well, yeah, they ended up subbing Courtois, like you said. Marcelo came on as well in the half at halftime, yeah. And 60-odd minutes or so, they got Vinicius Jr. instead of Lucas Vasquez.
Yeah.
There's a lot missing in this Madrid squad. There's a lot of uncertainty. I think it's normal for a team, I guess not normal, but it's understandable for a team that's coming off a bad season, who puts in a lot of these new pieces in the puzzle,
right.
And then for them to like instantly figure it out is tough. The only way to get some breathing space to actually figure it out is to take 3 points from games like these.
Correct.
So when you start dropping points in games like Club Brugge and stuff, is when the pressure just keeps mounting onto you.
Right.
In La Liga, they've made some sort of resurgence. They're top of the table again. So there's some pressure off there.
Yeah.
But as long as he keeps getting his 3 points from games that they're expected to, I guess Zidane has all the time he needs to figure out the ideal squad.
Does he though? Because even the games that they've been winning, they've almost had to be rescued by, like, not individual brilliance, but by individual, like, activity and individual performances. So, in terms of a team, in terms of cohesion, and which is why I think Hazard is sort of all over the place and not playing, I guess, as we're used to seeing him play. So, it's almost like Madrid are sort of suffering the Spurs thing, I guess, in the league a little bit, but yeah, it's interesting to see Barca having a tough time. They're still figuring out. Messi's finally back. What happens now? Madrid still all over the place. I don't know how Atletico Madrid have been doing, or Valencia, Sevilla, etc. But finally glad to see the La Liga shaken up a little bit.
Well, it's shaken up for sure, but pretty evident that Atletico, Barcelona, and Real are going to come out on top.
Yeah.
The order remains to be seen, but Sevilla's having a decent season. They they went top in the middle as well.
Yeah.
Also, like, in a sign of confidence or overconfidence, James and Bale not included in the squad for this game. arguably, they're two, not poor guys. It's understood that he wants to rest them. They're his two best players right now. Save them for these are the games where you rest players.
Right.
And if you come out with a loss after that, then it's like, oh my God, your team sucks. You need those guys in all the time.
Right.
So very interesting round of Champions League fixtures.
Yeah.
Now we have the upcoming game week. It's going to be interesting how Liverpool tackles Leicester.
Yes.
And whether they can sort of start consolidating, too early to say, that top spot, maybe?
Sort of. I mean, so City are playing Wolves. Not that Wolves have had the best season so far, but might get troubled here and there.
Good to see, man. But it's actually the mid-table that's going to be the the decider. Lots of movement. Can United start climbing up from 10th place? Can Spurs start climbing up from what the misery they've gone through this game, this Champions League game week? A lot to go through, a lot to watch. And you can catch our episode next Monday when we review the game week. And up until then, if you guys are new, again, you can catch us wherever you get your podcasts or on our website, munchamedia.com. Catch you guys next week.